Hello, you're listening to Sarah Jackman. With the collapse of various high street brands and many more reporting financial difficulty, directors' duties are becoming ever more important. Today, I'm going to examine the role of directors within companies and what exactly their responsibilities are. To help me do that, I'm joined by Richard Poole, a senior associate in the corporate team at law firm Goodman Derrick, and Jonathan Cole, a senior associate in the dispute resolution team at the same firm. Richard, Jonathan, many thanks indeed for joining me today in the studio. It's good to have you. Let's start at a very basic level then. Can you set out for our listeners what a director is and the various categories that they fall into?
So there's not actually a sort of comprehensive definition as to what a director is, but in essence it means someone who is responsible for the management of the company. So calling someone a director doesn't actually make them a director for company law purposes.
Yeah.
There might be various relevant factors for determining whether or not they are in fact a director. So there's sort of three broad categories for determining whether someone's a director or not of a company. The first is called a de jure, and that is when they're appointed in accordance with the provisions of company law. So their appointment is registered at company's house.
Mm-hmm.
The second is de facto. So they may be a director acting as one, so making important decisions on the part of the company, even though they might not actually be registered at company's house.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is a shadow director. They may be treated under company law as being a director if they are exercising influence over the management of the company. So although, again, they're not registered at company's house and they don't appear to be a director on the face of the company, they are directing the company from the shadows.
Yeah.
It's probably worth mentioning as well that there's a distinction between executive and non-executive directors.
Mm-hmm.
Executive directors tend to be employees of the company, whereas non-executives tend not to be, and their role is effectively to hold the board to account, so look out for the interests of shareholders and employees and other stakeholders and make sure the board's acting in accordance with their duties. But the law makes no distinction between the two, between an executive and a non-executive director, so their duties remain the same, whatever their role within the company.
Okay. Let's have a little look then at what those responsibilities are. Can you talk me through the director's key duties?
Yeah, well, the key duties are set out in the Companies Act. They were codified under the 2006 Companies Act, and there are seven key headline duties, and they're the ones that you hear quite often as a duty to act within their powers. Key one, obviously, the duty to promote the success of the company, and that tends to be viewed as shareholders taken as a whole, what look out for their interests. So you can't have a preferential interest for major or minority shareholders. You have to look at them as a whole. But as part of that duty, there's also within the Companies Act the duty to look at other stakeholders, so take employees, the environment, customers, other stakeholders within the company, to take their interest into account as well. So it's not very much just a sort of drive for profit and making the company grow and taking shareholders' interest into account. There are other aspects that sometimes come into conflict, and directors then have to consider what the best long-term view of the company as a whole is.
Let's have a look then at redress. I mean, what are the penalties if a breach of a director's duties occur?
So they're quite serious. They can mean personal liability for the director, with a possibility of setting aside a particular transaction that they may have been the company may have been involved in through their direction. There's also a potential in terms of recovery from the director personally for damages to compensate the company for decisions made by a particular director who's acted in breach of those duties. So there is personal liability involved in relation to any director breaching their duties to the company.
Okay, so quite a responsibility then for any individual taking on that post. And how often in your experience do you see breaches occurring? I mean, are they commonplace?
Well, it's a difficult question because the Companies Act, unfortunately, is riddled full of criminal sanctions for failing to file your accounts, failing to file your annual confirmation statement at company's house, some of the sort of more minor infractions, and there is criminal liability potentially attaching to those. And these are sort of infractions that happen on a, I'd say, daily basis on thousands, if not millions, of occasions across the country, and hardly ever will anyone be prosecuted for those infractions. Where directors breach their duties, they tend to come out, as I'm sure we'll come on to discuss, more often in an insolvency situation, or if there's a disgruntled shareholder, where a claim or there's some sort of dispute arising. That's when at least an allegation of a breach of duty tends to arise. But directors' duties tend to be more important only in those set circumstances.
Okay. Do you want to explain a little bit then about what happens in those sort of insolvency circumstances and what the potential penalties are there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, in effect, when a company gets into trading difficulties, the onus, the duties switch, in particular the duty to act in the best interest of the company and the shareholders, to the act in the best interest of creditors. So they have to, the directors then have to consider what are the best options available to ensure that the creditors will receive payment for their outstanding debts.
Okay, and so how does that place, I guess, an increased responsibility on the director, and how does that feed through in terms of potential penalties?
Well, again, there's personal liability and criminal, potential criminal liability as well. So the sanctions are the same. We're talking a different legal regime. So it's the Insolvency Act rather than the Companies Act that then begins to bite. But I mean, the key message to ram home for all directors is that when the company gets into difficulties, take advice as soon as possible. The liabilities become more stark and more important as the company does get into trading difficulties. And as we said, there's potentially personal liability if the company continues to trade either wrongfully or unlawfully after a time when it's considered to be insolvent. Johnny will be able to tell us about the insolvency tests that the directors need to be aware of.
So it's the directors, sort of, when considering whether the company has in fact is insolvent, it needs to think about whether the director at the time knows or ought to reasonably have concluded that there isn't no reasonable prospect of the company avoiding insolvency. So that's the key point, no reasonable prospect of the company avoiding insolvency. And that the best way for a director or a board of directors to determine that is to take advice from accountants, from an insolvency practitioner, to determine exactly when that point is, and when that switch that Richard was referring to from a director acting in the interests of the shareholders as a whole is made to a director acting in the interests of the creditors of the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and as lawyers, when do you typically see people coming to you and getting in touch? I mean, what are the sort of scenarios?
It's usually far later than it should be, unfortunately. I mean, it's more often than not once the company's actually entered into an insolvency process and the directors received a letter of claim from a liquidator saying, well, you shouldn't have carried out this transaction, or you shouldn't have paid this huge dividend to the shareholders. And unfortunately, it's one where if the directors were sort of aware of their duties a bit earlier and aware of the switch on insolvency, they might have avoided having carried out a particular transaction or done something with the company, which then can lead to the insolvency practitioner carrying out some investigations and then perhaps trying to recoup some of the losses that the company suffered from the directors personally.
This is quite a good example of where it's important to get your formalities right at the outset, because some sort of directors and officers insurance policies will cover only the statutory directors of the company. You do see them that they cover sort of shadow directors, but you don't want to have, when you have gone into insolvency, a question mark over your insurance protection personally. So if you haven't been validly appointed, suddenly you can be scrabbling around looking at your insurance policy saying, gosh, am I covered by the policy, or have I accidentally invalidated it because I didn't hold a valid board meeting or I didn't make a filing at company's house? So it's quite a good example of getting your house in order, preferably at the outset.
Okay. And just in terms of how you and other professionals can work with directors of property companies to ensure that they sort of stay within the guidelines, I mean, what's the best advice that you can offer to them?
In general, it's if a director is genuinely taking what he considers the best decision for the company to develop it in accordance with the reason it was set up and its business plan, and is communicating with shareholders, then generally the directors will be acting in the best interest of the company. I mean, there is a sort of a two-stage test. They have to act objectively and subjectively in the best interest. But if they're doing what they genuinely consider to be right, that is the best thing, that sort of practical advice that we can give them. I mean, obviously, Johnny's mentioned when you do get into difficulties or dealing with something complex, taking the advice, and if you can demonstrate to the courts or insolvency practitioner that we got this advice from our accountant, this advice from our lawyer, then that all helps to show that you've been taking the right steps and you've got the right procedures in place to show compliance with your duties.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important as well for directors to sort of understand, particularly of property companies, to understand the regulatory framework within which they're working, and understand that complying with that framework is a key part of complying with their duties as directors and their overriding duty of promoting the success of the company. And so, again, it comes back to sort of taking specialist advice, but specialist advice to understand that framework. There's increasing amount of importance on sort of environmental and social governance mm-hmm. within companies. And I think that properly understanding what that actually means in terms of complying with those new obligations is an important part of a director of a property company. And I think the other thing we find a lot of property companies tend to be owned and run by the same people. And I think it's quite key for them to sort of understand the distinction between what's in their interest as a shareholder and what's in their interest as a director of the company. In the company's interest as a director. And making that key distinction and making decisions that may not necessarily be in their interest, particularly on insolvency, but yeah. are in the interest of the creditors of the company. Mm.
And quite a lot of property companies, particularly larger or medium-sized groups, tend to have a sort of a group structure where they may have a holding company with several SPVs underneath, developing different projects or holding different assets. And it's important that the directors of each of those individual companies take into account that company's position when they're looking at their duties. It's easy to look at the group as a whole, which is probably where your time is spent, and you don't necessarily say, right now I'm dealing with SPV1 or I'm dealing with this. And the group as a whole is profitable and able to pay its debts, but there may be one company within there where the development's got wrong, and that company may be insolvent. Directors need to consider that and the support that the group can give to that company that's potentially in trouble.
Okay. I mean, just thinking about the way then that companies are structured, I mean, is one of the things to be aware of, in particular those conflicts of interest, because I suppose that's what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, again, that's one of the sort of key duties is to avoid those types of conflicts of interest. So, it's something that it's very important from the outset that the director understands that they're under a duty to avoid them, and that means, if necessary, not being a part of the decision-making process when there is a conflict of interest.
And within the group, you do tend to see provisions in companies' constitutions saying directors can be directors of all the other group companies and within the same group. But that's fine when everything is going well and you've got that protection in the articles of association of the company. But when things do start to go wrong, and if there is a genuine difference of opinion as to what action should be taken in relation to a group company, if you've got directors or the same board on each, then it can become very difficult, because it may be in the benefit, say, of if you've got a particular SPV that is in trouble, the best thing for that company would be for its holding company or another group company to make a loan to it. Mm. But that may not necessarily be the best thing for the potential lender to make that loan or capital contribution.
Given then the state of the economy and the need for people to stay compliant and within the parameters of the governing legislation, what advice do you give to someone who's currently thinking of taking on a director role? Where do they start in terms of making sure that they are compliant?
I think that, I mean, as I was saying before, that the key thing is, you know, use your common sense as much as possible at the outset. There's tons of information out there. Mm. Law firms are sort of produce so much information about directors' duties on the internet. There's loads of guidance out there on the government website as well. If you are unsure about your duties or you're uncertain about what you should be doing, just have a quick read of any of those, and they at least give you a high level understanding of what you need to do before you take on any roles. I mean, when you get to listed companies, their directors are often given a real long briefing by a sponsor or a nomad on AIM before they're allowed to get onto the market. But and they tend to be the more sophisticated investors who will understand their duties and role much more. It's at the smaller level of private companies where directors probably need to just take a moment. It won't take very long just to make sure they're aware of those duties. And we've spoken quite a lot about the legal implications. I mean, Johnny touched on the sort of the other side, the sort of corporate governance and social and environmental responsibilities, which directors need to consider as well. I mean, as probably in complying with their duty to act in the best interest of companies, if investors have certain criteria regarding environmental or how you undertake your construction, for example, that maybe you are acting in your best interest of your company by adopting the relevant policies or requirements.
I think as well, I mean, from a sort of a personal perspective, if a director is due to be appointed, or even if they have they're involved in the management of the company and they think that they may be classed as a director in law, is to have a think about ways in which they can personally protect themselves. So Richard touched on it before with directors and officers' insurance to assure against possible claims for breaches of directors' duties. And also, I'd also recommend that they check their service contracts with the company so that they can see whether they've got an appropriate indemnity in there to indemnify them in relation to any sort of liability for their actions with the company. Now, you can only indemnify for certain certain actions. So, for example, you can't indemnify for any fraudulent action on the part of the director. But these are points which I think should be considered from the outset to sort of guard against or to try and mitigate as much as possible any personal liability.
Yeah, okay. On that note, Richard, Jonathan, many thanks indeed for joining me today and taking a look at that for us. For more information on directors' duties and responsibilities, see the archive of the EG features at egi.co.uk.